When a national group looked at factors that might lead to government corruption, they gave Texas a near-failing grade of D+. In some cases, Texas lacks laws that would prevent undue influence over government officials.
Texas is by far the largest and wealthiest state that moves hundreds of millions of dollars of political money through the system with no limits.
In other cases, the laws have big loopholes.
There may be rules on the books about gifts and whether a staff can be wined and dined, but those rules are disclosure rules, not limitations on the access that the industry has.
I'm Shelley Koffler, and in the next hour, we'll explore the risk for corruption in Texas with experts on campaign financing, conflict of interest problems, and access to information. We'll also take your questions. Just how accountable is Texas government to you? Find out this hour following the news. Texas ranks in the bottom half of all states for being vulnerable to corruption. That's one of the findings of the extensive state integrity investigation that was recently released. It gave Texas a grade of D+. I'm Shelley Koffler, and this hour we're going to take a closer look at what this report tells us about Texas laws and lawmakers and whether they are really accountable to you, the citizens. And we're going to take your calls. First, just a little background. Kelly Shannon, a veteran Capitol reporter in Austin, was the primary researcher in Texas who tracked down the answers to 330 questions about public access to information, the regulation of political gifts and contributions, protections against conflicts of interest and cronyism. And Shannon says the research often found gaps between what Texas laws intend and what really happens.
Several reasons that these scores come down is we have unlimited campaign contributions to candidates, except for judicial races. We don't have bans or any kind of real watchdog on patronage or cronyism when it comes to appointments or rewarding with contracts. And yeah, we have a strong public information law as they go, but the way public officials and government agencies enforce it can bring it down.
There is an enormous amount of information in this report, which you can find by going to keranews.org. Just click on the state integrity icon. You'll find it at the top of the page. Now, during this hour, we are going to zero in on two aspects of this report with two experts. Dallas attorney Paul Wattler is a founding member of the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas, a nonprofit that works to provide access to public records and public meetings. And from Austin, Craig McDonald is also with us. Craig is the director of Texans for Public Justice. It's a nonprofit, nonpartisan group that tracks political contributions and conflict of interest issues. And it also weighs in on government abuse. Paul Wattler, let's start with you. And as you probably know from looking at this report, Texas gets a failing grade, a big fat F, for access to public information. We have a right to see a lot of basic documents. The laws provide for that. But the report says that there are a tremendous amount of exceptions. What do we have the right to see?
Well, the basic setup of the Public Information Act in Texas, it starts with the presumption that all information held by government, whether it's at the local or state level, is available to citizens, members of the news media, any person to request and to review. As you mentioned, there are numerous exceptions, and they've grown over the years, that really kind of make a hodgepodge of what we really have access to.
Well, I know we can see, for example, if I want to see the mayor's agenda, see where he's traveling this week, I can get the official schedule for the mayor of Dallas, mayor of Fort Worth. We have access to minutes from meetings. When the city hires a developer, for example, to do something, we can ask for those plans, and we should be able to see them. What else can we get?
Well, you can get usually you can get basic budget type information, information about finances, information about expenditures of public money. There's strong provisions in Texas law for access to that type of information. What increasingly we're seeing less and less of is the sort of communications that go back and forth between elected public officials and staff employees, emails, obviously,
right,
these days, and those kinds of communications are really one of the battleground areas currently of whether or not there is public access. And the real battle is being drawn over the use of private devices, private computers, elected officials using their own BlackBerries or iPhones to
it's
send.
It's a great way to get around the law.
And it's being used throughout the state. And there's a real question still. People like me believe that our Public Information Act has already addressed it and says that sort of information is public information. But there has been a number of cases around the state for a number of years that have really place that question into issue, and we haven't got clear answers from the courts yet.
I should mention that in the interest of full disclosure, I have been associated with the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas as a board member and as an advisor, a member of the
yes.
committee that does advisory work. So I want people to know that. What can't we get? For example, if there's a real estate transaction that they're negotiating at City Hall, I know we do not have access to that.
Exactly. There's a number of broad exceptions that come into play. There's a lot of more narrow exceptions. But the broad exceptions you see, you mentioned exceptions for real estate transactions. There's exceptions for personnel. There's exceptions for personal privacy. There's exceptions for law enforcement. And a lot of these can cut across a whole swath of territory. I mean, they apply to a lot of different things. And so you might ask simply for email communications about a proposed ordinance down at City Hall, and you see some of the information being withheld for really any one of these things that we're talking about. Matters of personal privacy, personnel exceptions, perhaps law enforcement in some instances. So the exceptions are, in some cases, very broad, as well as the overall mandate that information is public.
And you mentioned emails, because I know this is a major frustration for many reporters. I suspect it is also a frustration for many citizens. The public officials communicate back and forth their plans to do something or their feelings about a certain matter that might be before them, and then they delete it. They hit the big delete button, and they think that means their communications are no longer public records. What is your position on that?
Exactly. Well, there's a whole question of retention and whether information should be retained for a specified period of time so it's accessible, including emails. And that's an area that's been in flux in Texas as well. I think it's an area that Texas should work on is retention requirements, because currently agencies can set their own retention schedules within some guidelines set by the state. So there's a lot of room there to maneuver. Back in 1995, Texas, you know, up to that point had the Open Records Act, which was something that was passed with the printed word in mind. The act was amended in 1995 to make it the Public Information Act and to make it applicable to digital information, electronic information. And so it was an attempt 15 plus years ago to bring it into the modern age, but there's still a lot of gaps. Emails typically in government agencies that are go through government servers usually are considered public information. It's those emails that don't go through public servers, government-owned servers, BlackBerry to BlackBerry type communications, that there's less availability and more gray area of whether that is public information or not.
Well, I know this is something you're going to be fighting in front of the next legislative session next year. I also want to ask you about another body of information, and that is access to judicial records.
Right.
Because this is one of the things that the state integrity report says is a problem in Texas. And here's the scenario. Let's say you have a case in front of a judge, and because the judge's behavior is something that you find wrong, you think the judge is biased or not fit for service, you decide to file an open records request because you want to know if there are problems with this judge and other people have also complained. This is a situation that we have encountered with a woman who's been talking to KERA. She was in the midst of a custody battle when this all started. She says she filed an open records request with the State Commission on Judicial Conduct. And here's what she told us about what happened next.
From the very first time that we went and appeared in this associate judge's court, she had said something inappropriate to my attorney about myself. Well, didn't she get herself knocked up by the right guy? And so from the very start, I had concerns about the judge. I have really dark hair and I'm very tan. And so, you know, I look Hispanic, although I'm not. There was some discrepancy on, you know, what a document said and what it didn't say. And the judge said to me, do you speak English? I answered to the best of my ability, and she said, clearly you don't speak English. And she just finally looked at me and said, you have to be one of the most uneducated people I have ever seen in here. And I just thought, you know, how inappropriate.
So you decided you wanted to know more about this judge. Tell me what you did.
I filed for an open records request, and I asked for any and all complaints that had been filed against this particular judge. Several days later, I received a letter from them denying my request. It just basically says, please be advised that the Texas State Commission on Judicial Conduct is not subject to the Texas Public Information Act, as that act relates only to those governmental agencies within or created by the executive or legislative branches of state of government. I was really shocked. I think as a voter that you should absolutely have the right to find out who are you voting for and find out, you know, how are they rendering judgment on cases and what's their actual record? I think that you have a right to that.
She thinks you should have a right to that, Paul Wattler, but she was told she doesn't.
One of the exceptions in the Public Information Act that was alluded to there is that the act does not apply to the judiciary, to the courts, and to the agencies that administer the courts in the state of Texas, including the Texas Commission on Judicial Conduct. So that is one of those another broad exceptions that despite the overarching principle that all information should be available, in fact, in reality, in the practical application, allows information to be withheld. Which is not to say...
Is this something that is being contested, or does everybody agree that they can withhold all that information?
The exception, the provision that the Public Information Act does not apply to the judiciary has been in the Act from essentially day one, and the Act's been on the book for almost 40 years. So that is, it's really not in dispute, if you will. I think there's certainly concern that certain agencies that are not actually courts themselves but administer aspects of the judicial function, such as the Commission on Judicial Conduct, are exempt from that. The legislature is confronting that right now with the sunset review process, and they're looking at the Judicial Conduct Commission, and I think those are among the questions that are very paramount in that
and
process.
You mentioned the sunset process. I listened into a commission hearing with the Commission on Judicial Integrity, and I mean, they really were raked over the coal by coals by lawmakers, who said, "You won't even give us the information
exactly
about how you conduct your hearings. How could we possibly know that you are holding these judges accountable? It's not possible."
The commission reads the law as not even allowing them to share information about complaints, grievances against judges with the legislature, and that's something that has peeved certain members of the legislature to say the least.
Some of the other things with the Open Records Act that are addressed here, and we have just about a minute before a break, I want to talk about one of them. There is this idea that the people you're trying to get the information from have to respond to you within a certain amount of time, 10 days. That's not really the case.
No, the law says that information is available and should be promptly provided, and promptly means as soon as reasonably practical. There is a separate provision that allows, in certain circumstances, a governmental body to request opinion from the Attorney General, whether information is public or whether it's accepted from disclosure, 10 days to make that request. That's often conflated into the so-called 10-day rule, when in fact there is no 10-day rule that gives a governmental body automatically 10 days to respond to the request. It's often misunderstood, and oftentimes citizens, members of the media, will be told we'll respond within the designated 10-day period.
Okay, Paul Wattler, thank you very much. We're going to continue this conversation later this hour, both with Paul Wattler talking about open records, and then also Craig McDonald with Texans for Public Justice, who's going to talk to us about campaign contributions and some of the challenges with all of that here in Texas. I'm Shelley Koffler, and we will continue that conversation shortly, but right now, we'd like to take your calls, and we're going to ask you to help you support your public radio station here in North Texas. During this hour, we're looking at the State Integrity Investigation Report, which gives Texas a D-plus for being at risk for political corruption. Not a very good grade. I'm Shelley Koffler, and in a few minutes, we're going to open our phone lines and take your questions at 800-933-5372. That's the number you'll be calling, 1-800-933-5372. You can also email your questions to kera news@kera.org. With me are Paul Wattler, who works with the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas. He's been talking to us about the challenges of getting public information. Craig McDonald with Texans for Public Justice is also on the phone with us from Austin. And Craig, join us now, if you would, and tell us a little bit about the work you do trying to track political contributions in Texas and why that is so difficult because of the lack of limitations on donations in this state.
Yeah, well, we've tracked political contributions and lobbying contracts that are filed with the Texas Ethics Commission, and we've been doing that for about 15 years. When we first started, they were all paper records and dusty filing cabinets, and we took teams of interns to put them into databases. We've made some progress in transparency and disclosure in that now all those campaign contributions are available online. But I think what brings down the Texas score in this area and the gaping hole in Texas laws is the lack of limits on campaign contributions. Individuals can give an unlimited amount to any candidate except for a judge in Texas. They can give unlimited amounts to political action committees, political parties. And that is, you know, Texas is a very rich state. There are four other states who have no limits on contributions, but we stand out by far.
And there are no limits on what lobbyists can donate to candidates or parties as well.
Correct.
Is that correct?
That's right. We got big goose eggs there because many states have limits on what lobbyists can contribute to the candidates and to the members of the legislature and government officials that they lobby. Again, we have no limits as far as that goes.
Craig, why is that a problem?
Well, it's really a problem because I think it narrows our democracy. Too few people in Texas have too much clout. For example, when you look who contributes, the concentration of those who contribute to Texas politicians, almost 40% of all the money that went into the 2010 elections in Texas, these are non-federal elections, but all the state elections, that money came from just 200 individual sources. So out of 25 million Texans, 200 people are contributing 40% of the money. It's an extreme concentration that we don't see in other states. And I think that leads to some level of corruption.
Is it your sense that these people then have an inordinate amount of access to public officials and influence over their activities?
Yeah, it's no doubt that there are individuals who give the most money. $100,000 or more per cycle is not uncommon. And they have special access, not only access, but they have clout in the Texas legislature and with the executive offices. The governor might be the brightest example in this area, if bright's the right term. Governor Perry, in his three runs for election, has raised $100 million. Half of that, $51 million, has come from 204 sources. And there is there's a trail of pay-to-play politics in that. You can track how many of the governor's top donors and the legislature's top donors receive contracts, receive grants, taxpayer grants from the Texas Enterprise Fund, receive appointments from the governor. You can just follow that line and show that money really plays a role. And with unlimited contributions, that kind of exacerbates that problem. If contributions were limited like they are on the federal level, that is, no one gets more than, say, $5,000 worth of clout, I don't think we'd see the level or the potential for corruption that we now have in the Texas system.
Our guests are Craig McDonald with Texans for Public Justice and Paul Wattler, who's with the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas. We're talking about laws in Texas and the lack of certain laws that should be there and ways to get around the laws that open the state of Texas up to corruption in our government system. We will be taking your questions here in just a moment. You can call in at 1-800-933-5372. You can also email your questions for Paul and Craig at kera news@kera.org. And we have a caller on line one. Brenda from Dallas is with us. Brenda, welcome to our program. And I understand that you have a question about, I think it's the State Insurance Commission.
Yeah. Hi, Shelley.
Hi.
I don't know if anyone else noticed this over the weekend, but it was reported in the Star Telegram, I believe, about Texas Insurance Commissioner, I think her name is Kitzman, actually appearing at a fundraiser with insurance company executives, raising money for her former mentor. She came to Texas from, I believe, South Carolina, so that would be Nikki Haley. And is there not some sort of conflict of interest requirement that an insurance commissioner has to abide by? And at the same time, she has stopped making available on the Texas Insurance Commission website.
Thank you, Brenda.
Information.
Thank you, Brenda. You're bringing up a topic that actually is also detailed very extensively in this report. When the report looked at the State Insurance Commission, they also gave it a failing grade, a big F, for its accountability. And so, Craig, let me ask you about this, because Brenda brought up the issue of potential conflict of interest in the Insurance Commission. What do we know about any protections or lack thereof with respect to that?
Well, there are very few walls or bright lines between dealing with conflict of interest among Texas regulators and Texas politicians. Conflicts of interest happen all the time. What we try to do through disclosure is to make sure at least that those potential conflicts or real conflicts are exposed to the public. Too often we don't even get that information. We do have, of course, as any states do, laws prohibiting bribery and quid pro quo actions by public officials, but very few regulations that, again, build a wall between those who are regulated and those who do the regulating.
Craig, something I think I'm correct about, and this was a story that we reported earlier at KERA, you are required to disclose contributions or gifts that you make, but there's nothing that says you can't give them.
That's right. There's nothing that says you can't attend a fundraiser and try to raise money for others among those who you regulate. We've had numerous examples where regulatory officials write fundraising requests those entities, those businesses that they regulate. So it happens, goes on day in and day out in Texas.
I suspect and actually know that the legislature's looked at this a couple of times, but, you know, these are the lawmakers, setting limitations upon themselves. So that is in and of itself an issue. What have we tried to do with respect to making that more transparent? And what are the chances that we're going to get something like that through the legislature and have some more effective means to monitor those contributions?
Well, Texas does have some regulations that we call personal financial statements are supposed to be publicly available. To some extent, they are. And those statements detail gifts. They detail potential conflicts of interest. They ask you some questions, inadequate in the most part. That is, as a member of the legislature or a regulator, they ask, do you have a business relationship with a lobbyist? And that's a yes or no question. If you say yes, it doesn't require you to say who the lobbyist is or what business relationship you do have. So some of the framework for our disclosure is decent when it was first devised, but has fallen short over the years. The information is just not that easily accessible, and the information doesn't go into as great a detail as it should. You know, most of our campaign finance and government reform and open government issues came through scandals. It's been a long time since we had a scandal. And while we had a pretty good system when the Ethics Commission was first established in the late 80s, there hasn't been many opportunities or much interest in upgrading it in the legislature. And as you pointed out, it's the legislature who gives it a budget, the legislature who make the rules, and the legislature who just don't want to put any more police on their beat.
We're talking about the risk for corruption in government here in the state of Texas. Our guests are Attorney Paul Wattler with the Freedom of Information Foundation, Craig McDonald with Texans for Public Justice. You can join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372. Also at KERA News at KERA.org. That's where you can email your question. We have a call now from Jim in Richardson. And Jim, I believe you have a question about public information and an attorney general's opinion, how all of that works. What is your question?
Thank you. The question is, a public request is made for information of an entity. Perhaps the entity determines that they need to send the request to and the material to the attorney general for an opinion as to what material may be confidential and what may be released. Then the attorney general, within the 45-day period, returns that to the entity, and the entity is then expected to release the information that is releasable and to release the information with certain redactions. The problem, as I see it, and there's nothing in the statute that I've seen that corrects it, is how the requester is sure and how the attorney general's office is sure that the entity provides the material that the request calls for.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. We're going to let Paul Wattler take
essentially, the attorney general or the requester is required to rely on the good faith of the governmental body in fulfilling the response and following the guidelines or the guidance that has been issued by the attorney general. There is no real way to oversee that short of the Public Information Act does allow a citizen who makes a request, who's dissatisfied with the response and believes they haven't received all the information they're entitled to file suit in state court for a writ of mandamus. But short of that, there's really no mechanism to oversee what the governmental body does in responding to a request.
Jim, have you had a situation that's
similar
to
now.
That?
I'll give you a short
okay, briefly if you could.
Sure. I made a request to an area city for attorney billing records concerning a certain matter. I was told that the entity requested Attorney General's opinion. I was told that there were 303 pages that they sent to the Attorney General, and when I went to collect the material, it had miraculously decreased to 91 pages, and when I queried why that was, the city's law firm informed me, well, the other pages weren't responsive to your request. And I said, well, why did you send them to the attorney general if they weren't responsive? And I said, well, they weren't responsive. And so I'm dealing with that, you know, as we speak, as you might say. But
Jim, let's see if we can get Paul to explain a little bit about what's going on there. Thank you.
When you're in a standoff like Jim is in, really, I think the only remedy is going to be through the courts. And you do also have the right to sue for mandamus. But in that process, you can engage in discovery, make discovery requests to see some of that information.
You're talking about a very expensive process, Paul.
Absolutely.
And this is one of the things the report really honed in on, the fact that if you want to contest something like this, you have to spend a lot of money in Texas.
Right. Typically, you'd have to hire a lawyer and have to pay a lawyer his or her fees to pursue that kind of litigation. It can be very expensive. There is the right to recover attorney's fees in Public Information Act litigation, but that's at the end of the litigation, and oftentimes these cases can take a year, 2-3 years, and involve a fair amount of money. So it's not a very user-friendly system.
And Jim brought up something else. You know, he wasn't given a reason, really, for why those pages were redacted or why there was an omission. Is the agency required to do that?
Well, in this case, I mean, they went through the procedure of asking for an attorney general opinion. They're required to state reasons to the attorney general, what exceptions they believe apply. So there should be that sort of paper trail. But it's basically returned from the attorney general back to the governmental body, there's no system of fines or penalties for a governmental body refusing to comply with the guidance from the attorney general. So sometimes governmental bodies, whether at the state or local level, will just simply ignore what the attorney general says. And there's nothing there that says they're going to face a penalty or a fine for doing that. Again, the remedy is placed in the hands of the requester to go to court over it.
Okay. Well, we're going to return in just a few minutes to take your calls and talk further about keeping government in Texas honest and open. But right now, we are going to ask you to show your support for programming like this that keeps North Texas informed. I'm KERA's Shelley Koffler, and this hour we're looking at why a recent study says Texas basically fails in providing access to public information and in regulating campaign contributions. And we're taking a look at why that puts us at risk for political corruption. My guests are Paul Wattler from the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas and Craig McDonald with Texans for Public Justice. You can join the conversation by calling in, asking your questions at 1-800-933-5372. The number to ask a question is 800-933-5372. You can also email your questions to kera.news@kera.org. And Craig McDonald is in Austin with us with Texans for Public Justice. Craig, I wanted to start with you and ask you to perhaps give us some resources. What can we tell our listeners about what they should do, where they can turn if, for example, they believe that a public official is guilty of conflict of interest or maybe somehow not maintaining the highest standards of ethics that they should maintain?
Yeah, the basic path for that, Shelley, is to go to the Texas Ethics Commission. And there they have an improving database of campaign contributions to almost all politicians in the state, certainly any politician who's a member of the legislature or runs statewide. You can also get a personal financial statement from the Texas Ethics Commission. Regretfully, those are not online yet. You have to request them to send you one via email or via the mail. We have been pushing to have those personal financial statements, which disclose employers, disclose potential conflicts of interest, gifts, business relationships. They're very powerful tools in the hands of citizens, but they're very, very difficult to get. We do have the notion in this day and age that if a document or documents are not on the Internet, they're not really public, because that's where the public goes to get its information. So we keep fighting to get more and more on the Internet. But once a citizen believes that there might be a campaign finance violation, the misuse of campaign money, or something not disclosed on a personal financial statement, he or she has to file a complaint with the Texas Ethics Commission. And it's somewhat of an onerous process. You have to prove you're a Texas citizen. You have to get the complaint notarized. And the problem with that process is that the Ethics Commission itself, which has the power to police these reports, to monitor them, to audit them, doesn't do that. They only respond to a complaint from a citizen. So the citizens are really the police force in this whole mechanism. They are the ones that have to notice something is wrong, which is sometimes difficult to do. If a member of the legislature or some candidate doesn't disclose a campaign gift, it's very difficult to know that that gift was not disclosed. So the whole enforcement area really bogs down. But we encourage citizens to do it because it does trigger investigations. It does trigger the Ethics Commission looking at potential violations. But I'm afraid that's the only way it gets done.
Well, you know, Craig, I think you have referred to the Ethics Commission as having a great library. But you can check the books out, but you can't always get new ones. And, the enforcement activities are not very profound.
That's correct. As we say, it's a pretty good library, but it's not a good cop. And one of the reasons is structural. Again, it gets all its authority and it gets its budget from the members from the legislature. And I think the legislature certainly has an interest in making sure the enforcement from the Texas Ethics Commission is not particularly aggressive.
What kind of penalties are there for, let's say, a political figure that doesn't disclose campaign contributions? What happens to them?
Yeah, well, they do get penalized. There have been very few high penalties. We're proud to say that I think three of the largest penalties have come from complaints that we filed against politicians. Sharon Keller, we filed a complaint against her for not disclosing several million dollars in real property she had.
And Sharon Keller is state...
She's the Chief Justice of the Court of Criminal Appeals, and she had to appear before the State Commission on Judicial Conduct. In those proceedings, she claimed that she didn't have enough money and the taxpayers had to pay for her lawyers. And we investigated that claim ourselves in conjunction with the Dallas Morning News and found that, indeed, she had several million dollars worth of property she had not disclosed on her personal financial statement. And that resulted in a $100,000 fine, which she's appealing. But that's the largest fine that's ever been placed against a violator of the Texas Ethics Commission, usually the fines are in the neighborhood of $500 or $1,000. And the problem is that under our current laws is that those who receive a fine are allowed to use their campaign accounts to pay for them. So there's no real personal accountability. You can raise money from the same special interest you had to cover your fine. So we're trying to get those things changed, but I think it's a long, long, hard road.
We want to once again give you the number in case you'd like to call in and ask a question of our guests about public information and access to public records, also about ethics and campaign contributions. The number is 800-933-5372 to ask your question. You can also email your question to kera.news@kera.org. Paul Wattler with the Freedom of Information Foundation is here. Paul, I wanted to ask you the same question relatively that I asked Craig, and that is, what should people do? Where can you go to get more information about using the laws to their fullest to obtain public information, and where can you go if you have a complaint about what's happening?
Well, there, one place to start is with our foundation, the Freedom of Information Foundation, which is headquartered in Austin, and we have a website, foift.org, that has a number of resources posted there available, including FAQ about the public information process, how to make a public information request. We have a public information handbook that's posted there that has sample request forms. It will detail these various exceptions that we've been talking about here. There also another very good resource is the Attorney General's office. And if you go to the Attorney General's website, they have a open government section that has a number of things there that will assist citizens who are interested in pursuing public information requests. And the Attorney General's office also publishes a printed handbook, which is a very excellent resource material in this area. And that's posted. There's a PDF of that handbook posted online at the Attorney General's website. And that's really a quite invaluable resource.
It's free
in this
of
area.
Charge.
Free of charge. You can get a printed copy of the book mailed to you from the Attorney General's office. You can also access it online through the Attorney General's website.
As I said, I've been involved with the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas, so I do want to make that disclosure. It's a nonprofit. All of this information is available to the public. And I have to say, those sample letters on the website for citizens who want to file an open records request, it's basically a plug-in letter. It's very easy. You just adapt that template to your request.
Correct.
And it makes it very easy for you to cover your bases when you're trying to gain records.
So sample letters are available, but really any citizen can make a request. There's no magic words that you have to use. There's no prescribed form to make a Public Information Act request. If you just simply state that you're asking for information under the Public Information Act and list the information that you're requesting, that should suffice. You can even submit them by email these days.
What is your advice, Paul, to, you know, people, we used to think that they were required to give us the information in 10 business days. As you have said previously,
yes,
that's not the case. But what should you do if you're dogging one of your requests, you're not getting a response? How should you proceed to perhaps spur them on and make the information available in a timely manner?
Well, really, I mean, you said it. I mean, you've got to bird dog it through the process. And I would suggest, I would recommend that you check in frequently with the governmental body, making sure that your request has not been overlooked or ignored, and keep the pressure on. You can also, if you think a governmental body is not complying with the request for information that is public information, you can make, here's another resource, you can make a complaint to the Attorney General's office. They do from time to time act on citizen complaints. Not always, but you know, if the Attorney General starts calling up a particular city and saying, why haven't you complied with this, that usually gets the governmental body's attention. So that can be some leverage that you can bring into play as a citizen if you can get the Attorney General interested in pursuing your complaint to the extent of actually contacting a recalcitrant public official or a municipal government, for instance.
How likely is it that an agency or governmental body, when they're resistant to turnover records, will ultimately get their hands slapped or be penalized in some way?
Well, rarely in Texas. There are provisions under the Act for criminal penalties. There have been a few criminal prosecutions under the Public Information Act in the approximate 4 decades that the law has been on the book, but there have been very few, and they're more the exception than the rule. This has changed somewhat in the more recent years, but basically, to initiate a prosecution under the Public Information Act, it usually needs to start at the local district attorney's office. Oftentimes, obviously, local district attorney's offices are overwhelmed with more very pressing matters of violent crime and so forth, and they tend to oftentimes view complaints about lack of access to public information as low priority. So they're not very often prosecuted. There is provision for, in some circumstances, for the Attorney General to pursue criminal complaints. But again, that's fairly rarely done. As we mentioned earlier, there's just no penalties or fines per se. There's no administrative penalties or fines for noncompliance with the Public Information Act that governmental bodies were exposed to under the Texas system.
And just in the few minutes we have left, I'd like each of you to look forward to the next legislative session. It's less than 7 months away. And tell me, what will you be looking for with respect to open access to government and accountability? Craig, let me ask you first, is there something you're hoping for in the next legislative session that you think would make government more accountable to the citizens?
Yeah, I think there will be, Shelley, and certainly the issue of the role of the Texas Ethics Commission will be front and center in the next legislative session. That body is going through a sunset review right now. There's been a sunset report that most of the open government groups believe is a pretty strong report. More enforcement, a little more transparency. The question will be, once we get to the legislature, will that report be weakened, and will enforcement of campaign finance laws go backwards or go forwards? I think that's going to be a big issue that the good government groups will have to confront. But it will all be centered around the role of the Texas Ethics Commission on enforcement and disclosure.
And what are your thoughts about the possibility of that becoming successful? Do you think lawmakers will fight the idea that they would have to strengthen potential penalties that they might have to suffer under?
On the surface, when we went to the Sunset Commission hearings in just several weeks ago, it looked pretty promising. But again, then the members of the legislature were in front of the media in an open public body, where these laws generally get gutted are in the closing days of the session and behind closed doors, where a lot of things in Texas gets done. So I really can't predict. Again, on the surface, we saw some good support for moving forward with a little more enforcement and more disclosure. Certainly campaign finance limits, but I think the biggest gaping hole in Texas is not going to be on the table. It hasn't been on the table in
Thanks,
years.
Craig.
And in the future, I don't think we'll see any move to put limits on campaign contributions.
Thank you, Craig. And just very quickly, Paul, if you could, one thing that you hope the legislature will consider.
Well, it'll be interesting to me to see if the legislature sort of reasserts itself as the policymaker of public information in Texas. We've had a number of decisions from the Texas Supreme Court, where the Texas Supreme Court has become very active in this area, contrary to its history over the last 40 years of the Act. And I'm going to be looking more at a policy level to see if the legislature is really going to assert itself again and take control of public information back from the Supreme Court.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Paul Wattler and Craig McDonald, for joining us today. If you want to know more about the laws and loopholes that leave Texas at risk for government corruption, go to keranews.org, and that's where you can click on the State Integrity Investigation icon at the top of the page. We hope that we've given you some information that will help you fight back. I'm Shelley Koffler. Thank you for joining us.